This is your brain on risk. This is Mind Over Money, the podcast where Kevin Cook exposes the psychology of investing.
Welcome back to Mind Over Money. I'm Kevin Cook, your field guide and storyteller for the fascinating arena of behavioral economics, where my goal is to make you curious about everything from how the brain works to how we make decisions about money and uncertainty without knowing or caring how it works. I've got a very exciting topic for you in this episode. And while everything we talk about here involving your brain on risk is exciting and will be fruitful to listen to a decade from now, I hope, today might be the most controversial and prophetic topic of all. So I expect my children and grandchildren to look back and say either, "Wow, Dad, you were really ahead of your time," or, "Gee, Dad, it's kind of embarrassing how off you were." Let's find out. Our story begins in early 2016 when I read a report by Citigroup and the Oxford Martin School, which explored the varying impact that automation will have on jobs and economies in countries around the world. Technology at Work, version 2.0, the future is not what it used to be, builds on a 2013 research by Carl Benedict Frey and Michael Osborne, which found that 47% of U.S. jobs were at risk of automation over the next two decades. There was this startling projection as well. Risks of job automation in emerging economies such as China and India are as high as 77% and 69% over the next two decades. Basically, that means, 70 to 80% of people could be out of jobs over the next two decades in these emerging economies. As a technology investor at Zacks, I quickly became more interested in the pace and nature of innovation and automation after I saw the crisis ahead for literally billions of workers in the next 10 to 20 years. So in June of 2016, I wrote my own special report to help investors prepare for what was to come. The title was Big Economic Disruption, Big Data, Artificial Intelligence, and Robotics. And instead of focusing on which robotics companies to buy, I concluded that the long-term, no-brainer investments to capitalize on these trends were simply to buy the four existing dominant players in big data and AI. More on them in a moment. First, here's what I wrote in my report from June of 2016. That's a lot of emerging market workers put out of work in a fairly short time. And it challenges what I had long believed, that China and India would make steady progress in their efforts to bring over 1 billion people collectively into the ranks of the global middle class. That assumption was based on the efficient ability and desire of corporations to move manufacturing and service jobs to those countries and thereby balance the global market for goods and labor with the most cost-efficient choices available. But the reality is that automation trends, broadly defined as those involving cloud computing, business intelligence, big data analytics, artificial intelligence, and robotics, will create far more disruption for capital and labor sources than most are imagining. It's not just about the select company going out of business because a new technology or software solution, like 3D printed parts, just replaced what their 50 employees did for far less money. It's about entire industries getting turned inside out. In short, the industrial revolutions of China and India could be over sooner than many would like. Here's how the City Oxford report summed it up. While manufacturing productivity has traditionally enabled developing countries to close the gap with richer countries, automation is likely to impact negatively on their ability to do this, and new growth models will be required. The impact of automation may be more disruptive for developing countries due to lower levels of consumer demand and limited social safety nets. With automation and developments in 3D printing likely to drive companies to move manufacturing closer to home, developing countries risk premature deindustrialization. So, like I said, their industrial revolution's over sooner than anyone expects. The report goes on. Analysis of cities in the U.S. found that those most at risk include Fresno and Las Vegas, with those at least at risk including Boston. Obviously, they have the tech hub there, sort of the East Coast Silicon Valley, Washington, D.C., and New York. In relatively skilled cities such as Boston, only 38% of jobs are susceptible to automation. In Fresno, by contrast, the equivalent figure is 54%. And they continue here. Digital industries have not created many new jobs. Since the year 2000, just 0.5% of the U.S. workforce has shifted into new technology industries, most of which are directly associated with digital technologies. The largest number of job openings in the coming decades is projected to be in the health sector, which is expected to add more than 4 million new jobs in the U.S. from 2012 to 2022. Okay, that's the end of the notes from the Citi Oxford Martin report. So this amount of disruption should not be taken lightly. This is me continuing in my my June of 2016 report on big economic disruption. Massive changes are coming to industry that will have deep impacts for economies and workers. I think every citizen should be studying these changes and impacts on an ongoing basis to find the best ways to position their career, their business, and their investments. I will spend the rest of this report focused on investment opportunities that can be seen now. Obviously, the opportunities will be fluid, even if we believe we are identifying long-term trends and influencers. Given the disruptive landscape described above, what questions and investment opportunities are first presented? Here's a quick list of simple choices I made when I first considered the question a few months ago. A, stick with investing in companies like Alphabet, Amazon, and Apple because they'll thrive. B, explore new life for legacy technology like IBM, Honeywell, and GE. C, avoid direct investment in emerging markets and focus just on the U.S. D, concentrate in healthcare as demographics and innovation will drive earnings. By the way, that's something that I've done for many years, and I have a new portfolio here at Zacks called Healthcare Innovators because of long-term demographic and science trends there. And my last choice, E, was always look for new potential disruptors like Mobileye, which just got bought by Intel. They make the automated driving technology. iRobot, boy, a stock I watched it sit around at $35 for it seemed like 2 years, and now it's finally doubled. And, you know, they make the Roomba vacuum cleaner. And then Tesla, of course. Tesla is doing tons of exciting things, and we'll come back to Tesla in a moment. So in my report, to help better organize all these questions, I grouped relevant technologies into four major buckets. Bucket one was big data, which includes the increasing access that powerful cloud computing gives to all types of business intelligence and data scientists, developers, marketers, strategists. Number two was the Internet of Things. I wrote a Zacks Confidential report in April 2015 on this area, and the intelligence networks that are being built, getting increasingly bigger with billions of devices and sensors all around us. This will continue to feed the big data ocean. Bucket number three was artificial intelligence and machine learning. And this is the truly exciting and explosive part of what big data can do, you know, where machines can crunch it fast and actually learn and create new algorithms. So I spent most of my time in the report talking about that area. And then the fourth area was robotics and 3D additive manufacturing. So whenever you hear 3D printing, yeah, it looks like a printer, it's doing something, but the engineers like to call it additive manufacturing because of the process of creating new layers at the molecule level. So, and that area is considered the practical application of what all the bleeding edge technologies listed above can do. In that report, I did not talk about autonomous cars because, I'd already done a separate report on playing the smart car in June of 2015. And I said, you know, there are probably better ways to organize my four technology buckets, but right now they simplified things for what I wanted to do. All right, so here's how I concluded the report, and I'll tell you the stocks I picked then. So this brings me to my top four picks for the future of work. And they will all be involved in robotics and additive manufacturing in some form, whether providing the software to design, build, and operate the machines, or the cloud, AI, machine learning data to give them intelligence. Had you followed my advice in June of 2016, you would have bought Microsoft around $52, and now it's trading about $69. And you might have bought Amazon around $725. And this week, it's making new all-time highs above $950. Or you might have bought Alphabet, the symbol Google, G-O-O-G-L, around $735, and watched it hit new all-time highs this week above 960. And my fourth and final pick was IBM, which had a decent run from $153 up to nearly $183 in February of 2017, but has now fallen all the way back. More on IBM coming up and why you don't want to count them out. And it has a little bit to do with something called parallel processing. All right, I will be back with parts two and three of this podcast, Faster Than You Can Say, Massively Parallel Architecture. When I left off, I said, don't leave out IBM. And the reason is because they are partners with one of the premier semiconductor makers for artificial intelligence, and that's NVIDIA. Maybe you know NVIDIA for all the gaming stuff that they do. They make the chips that are called GPU chips. So they're CPU chips, which are central processing units, and then GPUs are graphical processing units. And these chips the way NVIDIA makes them, they're built on a type of platform called massively parallel architecture, where there could be hundreds or thousands of them instead of, eight core processors in some machine you might have under your desk. Massively parallel architecture is about having hundreds or thousands of little processors that can all calculate simultaneously. And this is how you can have, obviously computers that can beat any human in chess, but also do many other cool things. NVIDIA is selling these chips to all types of businesses now. That's the thing. They're going to be used for autonomous cars. They're going to be used fraud surveillance by banks in the cloud, tons of applications. So that's why you don't count out IBM. And in full disclosure, I am an investor in NVIDIA. The symbol is NVDA, just because I like what they're doing, and I think they've got a bright future ahead of them with artificial intelligence. We'll be talking about AI more in part three. So another cool thing that IBM is doing with Watson is they just inked a deal with Salesforce, the big CRM company, and Salesforce has their own sort of AI augmented intelligence called Einstein. Well, they're working together to provide, not only better customer service, but more intelligence about how to serve customers. So they're up to some cool things there. Now we want to, in this second section, talk about another technology player that I mentioned before that you never count out, and that is Elon Musk of Tesla. Now, while I was not a fan when he took his car company and bailed out his solar company, I called it a bail-in. The guy is still amazing for his visions. He's not just building a car company; he's looking out, to the future of where we're going to be 10 and 100 years from now. I read a book last year called Bold by Peter Diamandis, and he profiled Musk, Larry Page of Google, Richard Branson, and Jeff Bezos of Amazon. And what all four of them have in common with Peter is a desire to go into space too. They all have some type of rocket company that they're doing something with. So these are all very visionary people, and that's why you want to own Amazon and Google and probably Tesla. The stock is definitely on a tear here. I don't know if it's if I can justify the valuation, but. But don't bet against Elon, I guess, is the lesson. Now, here's what Elon is up to next that will have something to do with artificial intelligence. He was hinting at something called Tesla Mesh. I believe that's what they're calling it. And so I'm going to read to you a quick little description here from Recode. Apparently, Elon Musk isn't busy enough. The Tesla and SpaceX CEO has started yet another company, Neuralink, which aims to make implants for the human brain that can wirelessly interface with a computer. The technology, according to Musk, who brought up the idea at Recode's Code Conference last year, is a digital layer located above the cortex built into the brain. Musk calls the technology, which would intertwine computers and the human brain, Neural Lace. Oh, I called it mesh, but I guess, you know, maybe that's just a generic name for it. But the creator, Elon, is calling it neural lace. Kind of cool. All right, back to the Recode summary here. Neural lace could help humans keep a pace with rapidly accelerating advancements in artificial intelligence, which Musk said will cause humanity to be left behind by a lot. That's a quote. Be left behind by a lot. That's a theme that we just talked about, didn't we? With the help of brain implants that are directly linked to computers, humans may be able to improve their brain function, or even one day download their thoughts or upload the thinking of others. In the more near term, neural lace technology could be used to treat brain diseases like epilepsy or Parkinson's. You know, who knows how far away some of these achievements are, but it's really cool that a guy like Elon Musk is putting money there and getting that research done to find out what can be done. All right, now we enter the third and possibly most provocative segment of today's episode. I thought about opening today's episode this way. Our story begins 4 million years ago when the first human-like species began to branch off from apes. But I figured that might scare a few people away too early. Now that I've got your attention, it's time to scare a few people. One of my favorite intellectual pursuits is the study of biological evolution. I've probably read 20 books on the topic, with the most popular author, the late, great Stephen Jay Gould of Harvard. I'm working on a blog post right now titled, Three Books on Evolution You Must Read. While it's hard to pick just three, and I would exclude my second favorite author, Richard Dawkins, if I could inspire lots of people to read any or all of these three books, I would be very happy. Here they are. Wonderful Life by Stephen Jay Gould. You read this one because it combines some of the best work and talents of Gould. He describes the tremendous fossil treasure trove in British Columbia called the Burgess Shale, which reveals to us the story of the great Cambrian explosion of 540 million years ago. Gould is also famous for his theory of punctuated equilibrium, which states that life evolved in long periods of relative stability for millions of years until cataclysmic geologic events shook things up, causing mass extinctions and forcing survivors to adapt. The second book, Guns, Germs, and Steel by Jared Diamond. You read this one to understand why some cultures developed those three things while many other cultures did not. The answers are surprising. But you have to pay a price to get there because Diamond knows how central plants, animals, and climate were to the development of culture. And so he takes you on long journeys through this flora and fauna so that you too understand. The book is vital reading if you are to truly understand history. And obviously, with this theme, our discussion of evolution has morphed into the uniquely human cultural variety. The third book is Sapiens, by Yuval Noah Harari. I picked it up simply because it was about human evolution in particular. I don't even think I noticed or cared that the author was only a historian and not a scientist. And I am only barely into the sixth chapter of 20-plus chapters, and I know most people should read this book. The primary reason is that we'll give you a firmer understanding of this fact. There have existed multiple human species in the past 4 million years or so. How and why ours, sapiens, came to be king of the hill is the story told in this book. You could say that our creation story has nothing and everything to do with other creation myths like the Bible. I just happen to like the story that science tells better. You'll have to read it to understand why that is important. So this week, I thought I'd find out who Harari is. I'd never looked him up. I didn't know anything about him. Turns out, he likes Jared Diamond a lot. And you could say that his book Sapiens was sort of a part two to Diamond's Guns, Germs, and Steel, where he fleshes out more of the prehistory. And it's just amazing stuff, the journey he takes you on. Well, turns out Harari has a new book called Homo Deus, which is subtitled A Brief History of Tomorrow. This brings us back to my opening theme, the future of work. Harari is as concerned as any of us about billions of people soon not to have any reliable labor, including many of us in white collars and offices. He isn't doing prophecy necessarily. He likes to paint scenarios based on the past and the current direction of big trends. One conclusion is that there's a good chance humans could be extinct in 200 years. And if we are still here, we won't be the dominant species. Harari is warning that the gap between the haves and the have-nots is about to grow ferociously large. When I think about Sapiens, I'm like writing down some of the most important ideas in the book, and I think of things like gossip, how important gossip was to early humans, that, you know, it became a connecting social device, which, you know, sort of bootstrapped the evolution of our brains, because then that leads into cooperation. Humans wanted to talk to each other, communicate. So language is developing, cooperation is developing, hunting skills, you know, rules, and you know, this just sort of snowballs until you get into things like the agricultural revolution, which we think, we look back as, you know, this is all about progress and prosperity, but it's actually created overpopulation and not abundance, but abundant hardship for many people too, when they become slaves to the field or the livestock. So there's a ton of cool themes in Sapiens. Now I want to read you a short opinion piece that Harari wrote for the BBC just last month, April 28th, I believe. It's BBC Online. And this, I think, explains sort of what, you know, what he's looking at and when he wrote Homo Deus, and this is sort of the update. Is inequality about to get unimaginably worse? And here's the subtitle from the BBC. Could advances in technology, genetics, and artificial intelligence lead to a world in which economic inequality turns into biological inequality? Ask the historian and writer Yuval Noah Harari. Here begins his piece. Inequality goes back at least 30,000 years. Hunter-gatherers were more equal than subsequent societies. They had very little property, and property is a prerequisite for long-term inequality. But even then, they had hierarchies. In the 19th and 20th centuries, however, something changed. Equality became a dominant value in human culture, almost all over the world. Why? It was partly down to the rise of new ideologies such as humanism, liberalism, and socialism. But it was also about technological and economic change, which was connected to those new ideologies, of course. Suddenly, the elite needed large numbers of healthy, educated people to serve as soldiers in the army and as workers in the factories. Governments didn't educate and vaccinate to be nice. They needed the masses to be useful. But now that's changing again. The best armies today require a small number of highly professional soldiers using very high-tech kit. Factories, too, are increasingly automated. This is one reason we might, in the not-too-distant future, see the creation of the most unequal societies that have ever existed in human history. And there are other reasons to fear such a future. With rapid improvements in biotechnology and bioengineering, we may reach a point where, for the first time in history, economic inequality becomes biological inequality. Until now, humans had control of the world outside them. They could control the rivers, forests, animals, and plants. But they had very little control of the world inside them. They had limited ability to manipulate and engineer their own bodies, brains, and minds. They couldn't cheat death. That might not always be the case. There are two main ways to upgrade humans. Either you change something in their biological structure by changing their DNA, or the more radical way, you combine organic and inorganic parts, perhaps directly connecting brains and computers. The rich, through purchasing such biological enhancements, could become literally better than the rest, more intelligent, healthier, and with far greater lifespans. At that point, it will make sense to cede power to this enhanced class. Think about it like this. In the past, the nobility tried to convince the masses that they were superior to everyone else and so should hold power. In the future I am describing, they really will be superior to the masses. And because they will be better than us, it will make sense to cede power and decision-making to them. We might also find that the rise of artificial intelligence, and not just automation, will mean that huge numbers of people in all kinds of jobs simply lose their economic usefulness. These two processes together, human enhancement and the rise of artificial intelligence, may result in the separation of humankind into a very small class of superhumans and a massive underclass of, quote, useless, unquote, people. Here's a concrete example. Think about the transportation market. You have thousands of lorry, taxi, and bus drivers in the UK. Each of them commands a small share of the transportation market, and they gain political power because of that. They can unionize, and if the government does something they don't like, they can go on strike and shut down the entire transportation system. Now, fast forward 30 years. All vehicles are self-driving. One corporation controls the algorithm that controls the entire transportation market. I don't know if that's going to be Uber or Google. We'll see. All right, back to Harari. All the economic power previously shared by thousands and all their political power is now in their hands of a single corporation. Once you lose your economic importance, the state loses at least some of the incentive to invest in your health, education, and welfare. It's very dangerous to be redundant. Your future depends on the goodwill of some small elite. Maybe there is goodwill, but in a time of crisis, like climate catastrophe, it would be very easy to toss you overboard. Technology is not deterministic. We can still do something about all of this. But I think we should be aware that what I'm describing is one possible future. If we don't like this possibility, we need to act before it's too late. There is one more possible step on the road to previously unimaginable inequality. In the short term, authority might shift to a small elite that owns and controls the master algorithms and the data that feeds them. In the longer term, however, authority could shift completely from humans to the algorithms. Once AI is smarter than us, all humanity could be made redundant. What would happen after that? We have absolutely no idea. We literally can't imagine it. How could we? We are talking about an intelligence far greater than that which humanity currently possesses. And that's the end of Harari's opinion piece from the BBC last month. Okay, so that stuff is a little bit scary when you think about it. Now, that could be a couple hundred years away, but what we've got coming up even quicker in the next decade is automation happening at a faster pace. So last year, I tried to study it and say, well, here's where we should invest. And it seems that those were the right ideas. You know, you want to own Google, Amazon, Microsoft, others involved in AI and the cloud. And I've also talked about NVIDIA and Tesla. And I think the main theme is that, you know, everyone needs to be adapting as investors and as workers, because you never know when automation could take your job away. So keep learning, keep educating yourself, tell your kids, hey, be prepared to change jobs often, frequently, and to keep learning. And one of the best, one of the most inspiring ways that I've found to keep me on that edge is to look at all these different companies who are creating the future, whether it's a Tesla and NVIDIA, Amazon, Google. And, you know, I mean, even inside of Google, Google has a venture capital firm that owns 300 companies or parts of 300 companies underneath them, because they're constantly on the lookout for which companies are creating the future. All right. I've given you a lot to think about. The future is still very bright. We just need to adapt and keep learning to stay on top of it. All right, thanks for joining me, and we will talk to you soon.